Hey there, you're with Disembodied Podcast. This is Evie Escher. This week's guest is Shayna Francesca. Shayna is a speaker, writer, and entrepreneur. She's the founder and lead designer at Consonate, which is a multidiscipline interior design and life design firm working with clients around the world. Shayna believes our present and future are transformed not only by infusing our lives with intention, but by designing our lives and accepting our role as the author of our story. Side note here, it's been pretty warm for weeks in Southern California. I made the mistake of setting a gently blowing fan too close to my microphone while talking to Shayna. So it'll sound like I'm outside. Just picture me paddleboarding in Newport Bay or something, then the sound of the breeze will seem more appropriate. Sit tight. Here we go. Shayna, welcome to Disembodied Podcast. It's great to have you.
It's great to be here, Evie. Thanks for having me.
You have a life design business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you get into that? That's kind of an interesting thing. It's not just aesthetic design, but it's more than that. So can you introduce that a little?
Yeah, absolutely. So hi, everyone. My name is Shayna Francesca, and I help people live more joyful, connected lives through the principles of life design. And I got into that because I grew up in, it's kind of a convoluted story. It feels that way anyway to me sometimes, but I grew up in a very traumatic and abusive, very evangelical Christian household. And because of that abuse and because of the environment I grew up in, I came to a place where I recognized I saw no one around me whose life I wanted my life to look like. And because of that, it felt like I needed to seek mentors. I needed to seek something outside of what I understood the world to be so that I could find something to connect to that felt like it was representative of me. I needed to find myself. So I started turning to books and art and really found mentors in my head through authors and through different stories and started taking, you know, powerful quotes that connected to who I was and felt like they offered a window to a way out to another reality, and wrote them on index cards and taped them all over my bedroom wall. And then I used to take JCPenney catalogs and I would circle all the items that I wanted and dog-ear the pages of all the items that I wanted to be part of this new life I was creating and imagining in my head. And really kind of used the walls of my bedroom like a vision board for my life before I even knew the language of vision boarding. And that eventually led me to realize that interior design was a thing and I became an interior designer. But what was always prevalent and really showed up a lot in my work was really applying the principles of design to people's lives. And so I still do work with my clients and sit down with them and say, hey, I want to talk to you about what is the story you want your life to tell, and really work through that understanding of realizing we are the author of our story and taking ownership of being intentional with what we have control over in our lives. And then recognizing that our homes, we spend about 2/3 of our life in our homes. And at this point, probably a lot more since the pandemic. Recognizing that our home is the stage from which we tell the story of our life. Our homes are a vision board for our life. Recognizing that they are a direct reflection of our beliefs about ourselves. And this is not, it was never me saying, okay, you have a messy, you know, your home appears to me to be messy, so it must be messy inside your head. That there's not necessarily a direct correlation between those things. It's more a recognition or a place that I came to recognize that it's about people feeling fully represented, heard, and understood within their own home, allowing themselves to take up space and be fully present and represent their uniqueness in their own home, rather than conforming to societal rules or what they see on social media, or magazines, et cetera. And then about 4 years ago, so six years ago, I started my business, but about 4 years ago, I took my business full time. And around that time, I started doing group coaching using the principles of life design, which I just kind of gave you a little window into, and recognized that the conversation around life design was way more powerful than just applying it to interior design. And I spent 2.5 years doing that group coaching every single Monday for almost 2.5 years straight, and worked with about 100 people in that time. And 50% of the people identified as male and 50% identified as female. And it was stayed along that ratio almost the entire time. And so I recognized this conversation was applicable to everyone. It was ethnically diverse. It was gender diverse. It was sexual orientation diverse. Every kind of person was in that room. And the beauty of it was that we were all contributing to that conversation together. And so fast forward to now, where I've shifted my business, where life design is at the forefront. And then if people want to work with me, you know, to design their home, great. But it's more about them understanding that they can make shifts in their own home themselves, and understanding that, again, that their home and is this the stage from which they're going to tell the story of their life. They are telling the story of their life currently.
So by shifts, do you mean color, like color schemes, or like establishing order in the house?
I think what it means is, I think for many of us, we see constantly images through television, every kind of media, movies, social media, magazines, of these picture perfect spaces. And that becomes the thing we're measuring our home against. And it shouldn't be, because those images, those things have nothing to do with us, not necessarily. Should our home be a place that we feel proud to be in? Yes. But does it have to look like that? Absolutely not. It can be, yes, the way that your home is organized. It can be colors that you use that feel like they represent yourself. It's more about each person allowing themselves to be uniquely represented in their own home. There's not one specific design style. It's you. It's the things you've collected in the journey of your life. Perhaps it's maybe the artwork that your niece drew you, or your child, or that you drew. Maybe it's posters of concerts that you've been to and music that you love. Maybe, you know, these elements should be incorporated in our home, where, as you see images on social media and all, really being these hyper sterile environment, right? Where nothing is seen, everything's clean and pitch perfect. But that's not the reality of who we are, right? Life is not that clean. And I'm not advocating for a messy space at all, but there has to be room for us to live within our own homes, right? To be and exist, and for our homes to be catered to our needs instead of us catering to our home, right? Our home is there to support us, not the other way around.
Yeah, I identify with that a lot. I know that, first of all, I have a tendency to clutter things, which drives me nuts. I wish I could undo it in myself. I'm working on it. But I do notice when I go to people's homes, there's always like this feeling where you're either at ease there or you're not. Like, I had a friend a long time ago who had a lot of antiques. Okay. She was really into antiques and like beautiful little cabinets and chairs and stuff. But I swear to God, I was so uncomfortable because every time I would sit down, I would hear a weird creak and you'd think, oh my God, I'm going to like break this old chair. You know, everything was like too old and delicate. Like if you touched the table too firmly, if you gripped it or something, it would like rock. It was just like everything was delicate and fragile, and it drove me crazy. I didn't like going to her house because of that. I've had other friends too that it's like everything is so goddamn tidy that you're afraid to touch it. There's not a thing out of place, and like a white couch and stuff. And you're like, oh my God, I hope I don't spill the drink I'm holding, or, yeah. And that's uncomfortable.
I love how you just said that, right? So I think the actual difference in a space is not the things that are in it, but the person and the presence that they bring. Right? So let's rewrite the first scenario you described. If in fact this person loved collecting antiques, but they didn't consider that antique more precious than the person they're spending time with, then they would live in that space in a way that gave you permission to live in that space as well. Right? And in the second scenario, I think you can have a white couch and still live in that space. Do I typically recommend a white couch? No, the hell I don't. But if you have a white velvet couch, and you really like a white couch and you have a white velvet couch, that's going to come up much cleaner than other fabrics. But the point is, like, if I pour both of us a glass of red wine and we go sit on my white couch and I take off my shoes and I've got, you know, my foot tucked underneath me and I'm fully present on that white couch and I'm not paying attention to what you're doing with your wine, I'm not like hovering, right, within your experience in that space. I'm just letting you be yourself and take up space, then your experience in that space would be entirely different. So I don't think it matters the thing. It matters the presence we bring into that space and the energy we infuse into that space and who we're allowing ourselves and others to be in that space.
Yeah. So it's almost your behavior in your own space. If
Correct.
You're worried about it or not worried about it, if you're enjoying it or not enjoying it.
Yeah. Because we're here, we have one life, right? If we're sitting here being so precious about all the things rather than the people, no one's going to get to the end of their life and think, God, I wish that person hadn't spilled their wine on my sofa. Like that's not, I don't think that's going to be what we regret at the end of the day. I think what we would instead regret is like, you know what, God, I wish I hadn't had that reaction when that person spilled their wine on my couch and then we never spoke again because of how badly I made them feel about it. Right. I ended a relationship that didn't need to be ended, you know, because of something so stupid. So I think that that's the shift that I mean is that capitalism has taught us to value things over people, to value status over connection, to value individuality, hyper-individuality over community. What I'm proposing is that we work to dismantle those things, that we recognize that they aren't serving us, not really. Even the ways we think they're serving us, they're not serving us. And our consumption is consuming us. So if we take a step back and we recognize that we can honor the spaces around us and we are infusing them with our energy and our beliefs, right? Because we are all energy. Everything is made up of energy. So we are transferring our energy onto the things that surround us and vice versa. Then we can recognize that there is a greater power within us than we are taking responsibility for at this moment.
It occurred to me when you were saying that the desire to shop has often eclipsed my spirituality at times. Like if I get really into shopping for certain things, it's like you kind of don't meditate as much. You're like, you get kind of obsessed with acquiring things that you think will make your life better. But that is like an ongoing thing that a lot of us have where we're always acquiring things to make our life better. And it almost can get rid of or push out just the concept of enjoying our space. And I'm tying this to consumerism. That consumerism is basically pushing out the time that we would actually enjoy our space.
Yeah, because it's never enough, right? Consumerism teaches us that it's never enough. We need more things. And really, we don't need more things. I mean, yes, sometimes we need something. I'm not saying that we never buy anything. But I'm saying there's always this moment where we should ask ourselves, are we really going to use this thing? And how much are we going to use this thing? Are we buying this thing almost like we're hoping it will change us? Like we're buying something aspirationally, because that never works out. You know, they end up in a pile that we end up giving away or doing, you know, selling at a yard sale or offering up on one of the apps on Facebook Marketplace or something. You know, a year or two later, we're like, oh, that's where that thing went. I think in those moments when we're looking to purchase something, if we step back and we say, what do I really want right now? Is it really that I'm searching for connection with my own home? Is it really that I'm feeling vulnerable in this moment and really sitting down and maybe, you know, taking a hot bath or calling a friend may in fact change our entire perspective in that moment, you know, because we don't need more things, not in most cases.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you acquire a number of things by the time you're maybe in your 30s or something, and you probably don't need to just keep shopping all the time for stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And we can give things new life and we can try new things and we can, you know, be experimental and we can get curious about what's possible. You know, I'm not saying that we never buy anything, but I think we're at a place where we realize we're beyond a place of critical mass in our consumption. And our consumption is literally killing the planet, and it is killing us. It is consuming us. We are completely entrenched in it. You know, the way to get to step back out of that is to form community and connection with ourselves, and to create truly authentic community, we have to get back connected to ourselves, which is where life design comes in getting really intentional, getting clear on the story we want our life to tell, and then measuring up, using that as a guide for all the small and the large decisions we make every day. And I mean, every decision. It's not about doing more. It's about being more intentional with what we're already doing. It's about getting clear on, because story is how we learn. Story is literally, metaphor is how we learn, how we relate to the world around us, how we relate to each other. So what better way to relate to ourselves and who we truly are than to get clear on the story we want our life to tell?
I agree, totally. So what spiritual practices do you have alongside life design that you're doing?
Yeah. So meditation is a really big one for me. It's the way that I start my day. You know, I usually set, you know, heat up some water and set my tea out, and then I go and meditate. And then I can come back and sip on my tea and get my day started. But taking that time in the morning, even if it's 10 or 15 minutes, to just breathe is really critically important for me. And then almost every day, I usually go for an hour long walk, and I use that serves as like a moving meditation, a moment where I can feel my feelings. I can allow things to move through my body and get really present with how I'm feeling. And perhaps I might listen to, you know, on half my walk, I'm it's quiet. And the other half, I'm listening to something. Right now, I'm currently re-listening to Pema Chodron's When Things Fall Apart, and getting really clear, getting some spiritual support, right? And then, you know, once or twice a week, I'm connecting with a friend. One of my friends is a fifth generation shaman, and we have a beautiful, beautiful spiritual connection, and so much so that we typically can sense when one another might need us, like when we might need one another. And we had this beautiful moment a couple of months ago. I was really, you know, there was a shift happening in my business, and I was feeling very vulnerable and very exposed. And she texted me at like the exact moment I was sitting on my couch bawling, and she texted me. She's like, something's not right. And in that moment, she was just like, okay, get quiet. And both of us just meditated. And, you know, I now understand it to be astral projection, but because I'm still learning spiritual language. Growing up in evangelical Christianity, like all of this language is fairly new to me. But she and I were spiritually in the same space. And we were texting. We weren't even on the phone at this moment. And so we were connecting and just being in that moment together. And then right as I was about to text her, like, thank you for that, she texted me like, okay. So like, we were both in this space together. We knew when we were done in that space together. It was such a beautiful and cool experience to have friends that are there for me that way. But yeah, spending time with friends and connecting with myself, spending time alone and feeling my feelings is also part of my spiritual practice as well.
So you said you're neurodivergent. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. So neurodivergence is, so about 15% of the population is neurodivergent, which means they have been diagnosed with or self-identify with, because self-diagnosis is actually really powerful and fairly accurate, almost entirely accurate, as having ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, or being autistic. I was diagnosed with 5. And so, you know, at the time I was told that it was a handicap. I now recognize it as anything but. My brain works differently than other people. That is not by definition a handicap. And I really don't love that language applied to anyone, that someone is handicapped. That implies that they must conform themselves to our standards. And that is absolutely not okay. And so my brain works very differently than other people's. I process an insane amount of data. My brain has really no filter. As far as most people, neurotypical people have a filter that ignores information your brain considers irrelevant. My brain does not. I mean, it considers everything relevant, and like nothing is irrelevant. And so, yeah, it just means that I have this ability to read people very quickly to understand people's motives very quickly. And when I say very quickly, I mean within seconds usually. And it is what I now understand to be more of a superpower than anything, because I sense things about people and I've never been wrong when I'm like, don't spend time with that person. And someone's like, why? I'm like, I can't tell you why. I don't know why yet, but I don't think you should stick around to find out why.
And it almost then, sounds like intuition.
It is. It 100% is intuition. But yes, it is an extremely powerful thing. And it just means that my way of communicating, my way of understanding the world, I connect things that to other people seem disparate, but for me are absolutely directly tied. And as soon as I explain it to people, they're like, oh, yes, that is connected. I see what you mean now. But sometimes it takes me a while to be able to process the information in a way that I can explain it to someone else, because my brain is working so quickly all the time. That's a very, very basic understanding of what it is to be neurodivergent.
It sounds like it would make you a little bit prone to obsession too, with it details. Can.
Yeah, absolutely. It absolutely makes you prone to obsession with details, also to impulse, what appears to other people to be impulsive behavior, but in fact is a response to an overwhelm of data. It's just my brain, my body processes sensory information. Everything is much more heightened. So yeah, I now understand it to be a superpower, but it also can be frustrating to live in a world where people still see it and view it as a handicap and require me to operate in the same way that they do. So it can be very frustrating, but at the end of the day, I know how powerful it is.
Do you find creative work sort of having a spiritual component for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. What I think when it comes to our creativity, it is an expression of our soul. It is when we let it be, when we don't try to filter it through should, what it should look like, what it should be, what people expect it to be. When we let our creativity come out just in its pure raw form, I think it is a direct expression of our soul. And so, and I think we are all deeply creative. I think it's capitalism and white supremacy and all those hierarchical aspects of our society that have decided that creativity looks like this and only this, as a way of putting a premium on certain people's creativity. But I think everyone is creative. I think there's a beauty and a creativity in math. There's a beauty and a creativity in science and all of these different aspects of our lives. And I think we all just choose which way to funnel that out. So yeah, I think we are all deeply creative. And I think, yes, it is absolutely allowing that to come out is part of allowing ourselves to be fully seen and understood.
Yeah, I think creativity is kind of what keeps me going, actually. It's kind of what I look forward to every day, if I can be creative in some way. And I'm not sure everybody experiences life that way. Maybe there's a group of us that live like that, and maybe other people just want to problem solve or analyze. I don't know, you know, but I mean, I think creativity keeps me going.
I think everybody's looking for the opportunity to be creative, but I think so much of our society is set up to not allow people to do that, right? Because when we think about the industrialization of America and of the world, we look at all of that being programmed out of us, because creativity, when you think about what has helped stir revolution, in every time revolution has happened, it is artists who do that, right? So art, and when you look at what is first pulled out of schools, what is it? Art. Because art has a long history of bucking tradition, of bucking the aspects of our society which are most harmful. It is a way of putting a finger on that which no longer belongs, which never belonged, which was always harmful or is becoming harmful. And so if we lose our connection to our creativity, we lose our connection to ourselves. And so I don't think that it's that people don't want to be creative. I think they don't feel like they have the right. And I just, again, come back to why I focus on life design, is because I think getting reconnected to play and curiosity and our creativity and letting it come out as it is, right? Like sometimes my creativity for the day is how I made my scrambled eggs in the morning, or like, what, you know, just being able to get creative when I'm making dinner. I love cooking. So planning dinner and something that I'm going to love. Like that's where my creativity comes out. And in other days, it's working on a project for a client. And in some days it's writing an article for a story or, you know, putting together a talk. It just depends on the day. And I think tapping into different outlets for our creativity is also how we connect to ourselves, and we recognize that we are not one-dimensional. We are multidimensional beings, and we are meant to experience a wide variety of things throughout our life.
So who do you think is out there in the universe supporting you? Anybody?
Well, that's a question I have yet to answer. Coming from evangelical Christianity, I am very careful to align myself with any specific sky daddy. I don't understand or want to believe in someone pulling the strings, because I don't see any figure created in any religion that, for me, that doesn't feel exploitative. I think at this moment in time, I'm exploring Buddhism and what does that look like? I'm open to different things, but I'm very hesitant. I'm kind of giving any sky daddies the Heisman at this moment, because
that's cute. I like that.
I see how harmful those ideals have been and those formations of beings have been to humanity, and how much murder and death and harm has been caused, and so much hatred. And so anything that causes that kind of rift between two people is a no for me, a hard no, because it is more harmful than good. So for me, I recognize that there is absolutely that which connects us all inextricably, as Brene Brown would say, but no sky daddies at this moment. No.
Well, I think that people want to be right about things. Okay.
Yes.
So this is a human construct,
yes,
wanting to be,
yes,
right, and wanting,
yes,
to be revered as some sort of sacred or special person.
Yes.
That's another,
yes,
problem.
Yes.
So you get people, whatever's in the heavens or the sky, maybe it can just be a resource to help you. It doesn't have to dictate or impose any sort of structure on your life necessarily.
Yeah.
So I think that's the problem, is that humans always want to come up with a priest or some sort of intercessor,
yeah,
that can communicate with whatever's in the sky and bring it down,
yeah,
to the earth and then be revered by everybody.
Yeah, well, it absolves us of our personal responsibility, right? It provides protection against doing the uncomfortable work. And I think the thing that Buddhism really, that I've connected to so far, and again, I'm like a baby at this, right? So I'm just diving into it. But the thing that I keep connecting back to is the recognition that Buddhism brings, that is, and this is, again, my interpretation of life isn't necessarily meant to be comfortable. It's not meant to be miserable either. We're not meant to martyr ourselves, but we're meant to lean into the uncomfortable. We're meant to grow and learn. And life is messy. You know, it's never going to not be messy. So when we're looking to separate ourselves from the messy, we're actually separating ourselves from our humanity. And perhaps we're meant to lean into and just feel the uncomfortable moments. Right? When we impose the idea that someone else needs to intercess for us, we're stepping away from the uncomfortable. We're stepping away from that which actually makes us human.
You know, Buddhism has, like, there's so many different schools of Buddhism, but
yeah,
I kind of like the middle path where, you know, you,
yeah,
don't live in excess, but you don't live like a pauper necessarily.
Correct.
Either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's kind
no
of
one
the
needs
one
to
I
be.
Like.
Yeah. No one needs to be making hundreds of billions of dollars. No one needs to be homeless either, right? Like, yes, there is a middle path that absolutely, and I'm 100% with you there. I don't think this is the only life I am sure that I have. And so I think I am meant, and we all are meant to live it and enjoy it and do it together, because being separate from one another is only costing us so much, only causing us so much more pain than we need to experience. No matter what, we're experiencing pain, whether it's separating ourselves from one another, trying to protect us from ourselves from pain, we're still experiencing pain because we're not meant to do this life alone, or living in life with other people and it gets a little bit messy. But, you know, as we lean into who we are, we attract different people into our life, and we can really build a beautiful community of people that support us and love us for who we are.
Yeah, it's so true that you don't really protect yourself by staying away from others.
No.
You just end up lonely and
exactly.
kind of like wondering what the purpose of life is. So
correct.
We are exactly. here to interact with each other. And I think that anybody who promotes community is probably doing all of us favors because
yeah.
it's too easy to disconnect nowadays with the technology that we have.
Exactly. It's way too easy. And I think, you know, I'm feeling and hoping and praying that this shift is, I still say praying, even though I don't pray anymore. and just, you know, doing the work and working with people through it so that we can recognize that community is our way, right? Community is the way that we build a better world.
I believe that too. I believe that you have to find your friendship community, your family community, all of these things. And it's tough to navigate because you don't choose your family members, you know, you just kind of come into the world and you have to deal with a set of people.
Yeah.
And that can be a tough community to manage.
It is.
It has been for me.
It is for me too. Yeah. Most of my family is still evangelical Christian. And so, yeah, it is, family is hard, but you know, ultimately, you know, we get to choose whether or not they stay a part of our life or not. And, you know, we get to choose if people are harmful to us, it doesn't matter blood relation or not, you know, we get to choose whether or not they have access to us. And we don't need to feel guilt or shame around releasing relationships that are no longer serving us.
Yeah. And it's a percentage thing. You know, you don't have mm-hmm. to spend 90% of your time
correct.
With people that don't understand you or don't like you. You
yeah.
can spend,
yes.
you know, you can go to family events sometimes and spend a little time, but you just don't have to spend a lot of time with people.
Yeah. And you can set boundaries. Exactly. You can set boundaries around your time and how much you're spending with people. And that's what I've done, you know, with my family is they know what topics are and are not, you know, available for them to dive into and offer their opinion on in my life. And then there are topics that are open, right? And they come to me because we set those boundaries. They actually come to me more often. Before I understood that I could set boundaries and I could enforce those boundaries, you know, there was a lot more conflict in my life with my family. The more I have put up healthy boundaries, you know, at first it caused more conflict and then it caused less. So I think, you know, that became a really big lesson for me in all relationships in my life.
Yeah. Everybody has to learn that at some point. If you don't,
yeah.
you just end up struggling with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
So what does Shayna's house look like? I'm really curious. could you
yeah.
like describe what your living space looks like?
Yeah. So my living space looks like I have my bedroom and then and I'm a big proponent for your bedroom, remembering that it is the first thing you see in the morning and it is the last thing you close your eyes to every night. So recognizing that that needs to be a space that honors who you are and supports you and that you feel safe and connected to. So, you know, a nice, maybe calming color on the walls and then textures and different things that really, you know, feel soft and sumptuous or just that feel connected to who you are, right? So, and then I keep all of many of my books are in there. It's like a library in here. It's where I record most of my podcasts because it has the most soft surfaces. So it keeps the noise levels from other parts of the house down. And then I have a den space and an office and those kind of surround my bedroom. And then I have my living room and that's laid out with a big, you know, beautiful sectional so that lots of people can fit on it together. And then my kitchen is like bright and beautiful and a place where I opened up the doorway into the kitchen so that more people could kind of pass through and come in and out without bumping into each other. Because we all know that whenever you have people over, somehow everyone ends up in the kitchen. There's not a chair to be found in there. So, you know, it's just, and the kitchen has been renovated so that the sink is looking out the window. It didn't used to be like that. So that when I'm standing there doing the dishes or whatever I'm doing, I'm able to look out and really take in the beauty of the outside and perhaps open the window and let the air in. But it's more about the feelings and how the spaces are set up to support me, you know, to create quiet space and then connection space and separate those things from one another and make sure that I'm able to take time away. Because a part of being neurodivergent is getting overwhelmed by sense, like things that connect to our senses. So I have hypersensitivity to touch and sight. And I mean, from light. I have light sensitivity and noise sensitivity. So being able to have spaces where I can just sequester myself away, even maybe when people are over, I might need to just go take a breath for 5 minutes. That's really important for me.
And do you have plants and animals in your house?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, well, my dog passed away about a year ago. But I did have, and I keep her, she's looking at me right now while we're doing this podcast. I keep a picture of her right with me. But I love dogs. They are, I believe, such beautifully spiritual creatures, but I am a plant mom through and through. I have plants everywhere. I love orchids. They're my favorite flowers. So I keep orchids. I love succulents. They are such a resilient, interesting, fascinating things. So I have this big planter full of succulents, all different kinds. And then I have a fig tree, a small fig tree plant, and then a bunch of other like random plants, but I have a window full of them. And then I keep them kind of in every window of the house because not only do they help cleanse the air, but they just help connect us to the outside.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. I think plants and animals are kind of like the life of an interior space. And if you don't have animals, you got to have plants.
Yeah. We need something to remind us that we aren't the only thing here, right? And that we're all interconnected.
Right.
We're all interconnected.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your life design consultancy and your general spiritual impressions and creative impressions, community impressions. We can put a link to your website in the show notes for this episode so people can connect with you. I know you do workshops, right?
I do. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And we have some live workshops coming up. September 17th is when they kick off. And then we'll be doing some weekend versions so that you get it done, connect with it in 2 days. I know sometimes we can, in our lives, we can just have a 2-hour window, and sometimes we can set aside an entire weekend. So I try to accommodate people that way. And then also we'll be providing digital recordings as well if people want to work through the information on their own time.
Okay, great. Wonderful. All right. Thanks so much, Shana.
Thanks, Evie. Thanks for having me. I love the conversation.
Feel free to leave questions or comments for this episode at disembodiedpodcast.com.